Support for today's broadcast comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com.
As states struggle to implement the Bush administration's No Child Left Behind education plan, some of them consider saying no thanks.
This federal legislation makes our neighborhood schools accountable to the federal government instead of the neighborhoods.
Debating whether to leave the Bush education plan behind. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 Central on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, our monthly discussion about diet and nutrition. This afternoon, we'll talk specifically about children and overweight. Our guest today is Frances Berg. She's an expert in the field of nutrition. She's also the author of Underage and Overweight, America's Childhood Obesity Crisis, What Every Family Needs to Know. Let me give you a sense of what Frances Berg has to say in this book. First, most children and teenagers are slender, but the number of youngsters who are overweight is growing, and it's a very significant trend. She also says this is important because overweight kids face increased risks for health problems down the road. Now here's something that might surprise you. Frances Berg says diets for kids almost always fail, but she says there are ways to get children to be more active and understand the basics of good nutrition. She's an advocate for wellness and wholeness and health at any size. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest, Frances Berg. You can join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Frances Berg is the founder and editor of Healthy Weight Journal. She's a licensed nutritionist, family wellness specialist, and adjunct professor at the University of North Dakota School of Medicine. Her book, Underage and Overweight, is published by Heatherly Press, and you can find her on the World Wide Web at www.healthyweight.net. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. Frances Berg, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Celeste. I'm delighted to be here.
How many children and teens are overweight or at risk for becoming overweight?
Well, the statistic we have now is 15% of our kids between the age of 6 and 19 are overweight. At the 95th percentile. So that's about triple how many there were 30 years ago. So it's definitely on the increase. But, you know, we have to be careful not to overreact, and parents need to be careful what they do here, because we can make the risks of intervention can be worse than not trying to intervene and to have them lose weight. So parents really need accurate information. I guess that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is because I'm not sure that parents and even health professionals are getting accurate information, and how can they make good decisions if they don't have accurate information.
Yeah, and there's so much information out of there, and sometimes it seems so contradictory, and it seems that the experts are at odds, and it's difficult to sort through. But I think one of the points that you make in the book is that a child's weight is just one aspect of his or her health, and it's important to keep that in perspective.
Yes, and we're looking at the total health of the child, and who knows that better than the parent? So parents need to trust themselves that their judgment is good here.
Yeah. Well, let's talk right at the top here about these ideas, wellness and wholeness and health at any size. What does that mean?
Well, it means the best advice we can give anyone is to think about how you can be healthy at the size you are. Now, unfortunately, in the last 20 years, it's been like first you get thin and then we help you to be healthy. And that's going at it the wrong way, especially since we don't have any ways to help people get thin. So the first thing to do is think about health and how can we be more healthy? Well, the very first thing that we need to make sure our children are doing, and adults too, is to live actively. We need to be active every day. And I guess there's three things that really help, that I think can really help parents if they think live actively, eat well, and feel good about yourself and others. So this means we can't be scolding kids, we can't be scaring them about health risks and all those things. We need to help them feel good about themselves so they respect and accept themselves and feel empowered to make some changes.
Yeah. What do you think is behind the idea that on the one hand, or the fact that on the one hand we're growing heavier as a nation, yet we're so seemingly obsessed with weight and dieting?
Well, obviously, dieting isn't working or we wouldn't have this increase. And I, you know, you have to wonder how people can go through this again and again and again. You know, one definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. But the one point the book makes over and over is that diets aren't working, pills aren't, or any other weight loss method. And all of these methods carry some health risks. So prevention is the best answer, and even when a person may be heavier, we need to think about the lifestyle at that weight rather than thinking about losing weight.
Yeah. In general, how good or how poor do you think the public's understanding of diet and nutrition is?
I think the public tends to get it wrong. They tend to. Well, in health professionals, too, they give lip service to physical activity, and then they say, but restrict this and this and this. And to me, that's going at it totally wrong. We need to first get physically active, and then as far as eating, you know, little kids eat, they're tuned into their body signals. They eat when they're hungry and stop when they're full. And somewhere along the line, people are getting away from this. And a lot of adults, they don't know when they're hungry or when they're full. But we need to get back to tuning into our body signals. And this is normal eating. Try to eat, if we can eat three meals a day and one or two snacks, then we'll eat when we're hungry and stop when we're full. And if we could all do that, I don't think we'd have these tremendous eating and weight problems we have in this country today.
Yeah. It seems one of the things that can happen to people when they're dieting is that that hungry signal gets out of whack.
Oh, it does. And not only that, dieting and restricting food increases food preoccupation. So then the person is thinking about food all the time and then usually binging, dieting, binging, fasting, skipping meals. This is not normal eating. Normal eating is to eat, well, hopefully three meals a day, and that seems to be something a lot of families are getting away from too, which is very unfortunate. I think every family should try really hard to sit down at least once a day to a meal together. And, of course, turn the television off, because who's important here? Is it those celebrities on TV, or is it the family that... their time is so precious to be able to communicate with each other.
Yeah. Would you say that dieting could contribute to eating disorders?
Yes, there's quite a bit of evidence that it can. It also, there are several studies also, long-term studies, that show that people of the same weight, if one of them diets, that person ends up heavier. And so there are many reasons not to diet, plus that it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, in the wellness and wholeness approach and health at any size, if we're on that, if we're going down that path, can we take weight off and hope to keep it off?
Well, yes. If weight comes off, if we're more active, and we're eating normally, so we're not binging and fasting, many people will lose weight as a result of that. And it comes off slowly, but it will stay off. And that's the difference in restricting food. When we restrict food, then the whole body goes into a survival mode, closes down, defends those few calories that you're eating. And this is why dieting doesn't work.
Let's talk with a listener. We've got a listener who's waiting to talk with us. Our guest this afternoon, Frances Berg, founder and editor of Healthy Weight Journal. She's a licensed nutritionist, family wellness specialist, and adjunct professor at the University of North Dakota School of Medicine. She is also the author of Underage and Overweight, America's Childhood Obesity Crisis, What Every Family Needs to Know. Listeners, you can join us with your questions and comments. Give us a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a listener waiting on the toll-free line, a caller in Aurora. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. This isn't a situation with children. I'm sorry I didn't hear your first words when the program came on. But I wondered if you could help me with this problem. I have a friend that has what do you call the most, is it morbidly obese, the worst obesity there is?
I think it's better not to use those terms, especially with children.
No, I'm not talking about children. I said this was not for a child.
Oh, for an
adult. And I'm sorry I didn't hear your words, and then
I would say severely. Severely.
Yes, thank you for the better word. That's what I was looking for. And I got the Ultimate Weight Solution Food Guidebook, and my friend knew about it, and she has been her sister and her have been trying to get her brother to reduce him, to mm-hmm. go on a mm-hmm. diet, whatever, to reduce his weight. And when she heard I had this book, she lives out in another state, she suggested I give it to her brother. Well, I don't know about that, and could you give me some wise words? They have tried for years to get the brother to diet. They each live in another state.
Okay, this is this is what happens a lot of times, and you know, it's as though this person does not know they're overweight. Like people think they don't. Well, if a person is severely overweight, they know it. But what is helpful for family members and friends is to help that person be more active. It's I don't know if you were on the listening when we talked about diets. Dieting doesn't work. It throws your body into a defensive state, and people can lose weight for as long as 6 months on any diet, and after that, the weight comes back. And within one or two years, it's almost inevitably they have gained all that weight back. And many times they end up heavier than they were before. So dieting is not working. But what does work is to be more active, and I know when a person is very large, sometimes it's hard to be active.
It is. It's very hard for him.
But there are many things that can be done, and you can do it in the house. You can maybe just walk around the counter, hanging onto the counter for 5 minutes every day for a month. Start with that, and then
let me write that down.
Walking around, putting your hand on the counter, kitchen counters or table, whichever is the right height. Sitting in a chair and doing some activity, but it's better not to go overboard the first week, but just get into this gradually. And I like to tell people, even if they go outside and walk or whatever they do, to just do 5 minutes. If they're not used to doing physical activity, just do it 5 minutes a day for a whole month. And by the end of that month, you should be able to figure out what time of day works best for you.
Oh, that's a good idea, isn't it, the time of day?
Mm-hmm. If it works better for you to do it in the house or to go outside, but you can usually get in that 5 minutes. And then every week or so, add a minute. And now, it doesn't mean you're going to get fit in 2 months, but the idea is to develop a habit.
Oh, that is such a good sentence. The idea is to develop the habit.
Right, and then even if the person does not lose weight, and we can't promise weight loss either. Not everybody will lose weight, but they will be healthier because there are quite a few studies now that show if people increase their physical activity, they will be healthier no matter whether they lose weight or not. So I think this is what we need to focus on, and this is why I call it health at any size or health at every size. We talk about being more physically active, eating in healthier ways, and then feeling good about ourselves, too, because that can cut down on stress and make us feel better about ourselves.
Well, thank you. You've been most, most helpful.
Okay, good luck, then.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Marshall on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I just now have heard you saying that you are not particularly fond of any diet, right? It has to be more physical activity and what your calories. But what I was going to ask about is what your opinion of the South Beach diet.
Well, right now, low carbs are all the rage, right?
Right.
But I believe it's one more fad. I have reviewed weight loss diets worldwide in the scientific literature for the last 20 years, and there have been, like, all these miracles that have maybe about a four-year run, and then people can't get rid of them fast enough because... And what I tell people is, if you hear of a good diet, you think it's a good diet and people are losing weight on it, and you think maybe you'd like to try it, wait 2 years. And then you look at these people again and you ask them how they liked it. Chances are they will have forgotten all about that diet because by the end of the first year they were done with it, right? So I think it's good advice to just wait and and see.
All right.
I also wish people would keep a record of their dieting history. You know, a record of what did you weigh when you started this diet, what did you weigh when you ended, and they would soon realize that the pattern of a chronic dieter is just to lose weight, and usually maybe you lose 10 pounds, you gain 12, you lose 15, and you gain 18, and so it's your life is so disrupted that you're not eating normally or being active in normal ways.
All right, well, thank you for that information.
Okay, good to talk to you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions are invited. Our guest today, Frances Berg, this is the Afternoon Magazine. Today, our monthly discussion about diet and nutrition. We're talking specifically today about children and overweight. Our guest, Frances Berg, is an expert in the field of nutrition. She's the author of Underage and Overweight, America's Childhood Obesity Crisis, What Every Family Needs to Know. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, my name is Celeste Quinn. I welcome your telephone calls, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-9455. W-I-L-L. It might be useful, I think, if you would talk about a couple of principles in how we burn calories, because this is something I think that we're not up to speed on, if you'll pardon the pun. Metabolism and thermogenesis. What are they? And would you talk about what this means in terms of our genes?
Sure. Sometimes people oversimplify why people are overweight, you know, why they gain excess weight. And actually there are probably 20 or 25 possible causes. And many of these are genetic things that we're not going to be able to change. some people have thrifty genes that just defend the fat that they have on their bodies. Some people have a slower metabolism, which the basal metabolism is how fast your inner clock is running when you're not being active. You're just standing still, but a lot is going on in the body. another way we burn calories is by thermogenesis, which means when we eat food, our body's heat rises, and this burns up extra calories. And then the third way that we burn calories is through physical activity. So all of these ways we're burning calories. And if a person eats a very big meal, then that thermogenesis burns higher. And this is how sometimes if we eat an extra big meal over Thanksgiving or something, you think, well, I probably gained 2 pounds from this. You actually probably don't gain anything because your body regulates. Next day you probably eat a little less. You have higher heat burning off in your body. So it's only when you continue to eat those big meals that you're going to notice it probably.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Lawrence County, line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like for the guest to comment on the nutrition of school-age children and the availability of soft drinks, possibly in schools or at home, and just anything that she's come across, any studies on that, and I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay, great question.
Okay, well, there are at least 2 chapters in the book Underage and Overweight about schools. One is the situation that is not very desirable in a lot of schools, and then what parents are doing. And I think parents need to go to the school and see what the situation is about vending machines. When are the pop machines? How many are there, and when can they be used? And also, what's going on in the lunchroom? Because many parents have gotten together and been able to change that. But the unfortunate thing for our children is children that are not, even children who are not overweight, are probably not eating in very healthy ways. Unfortunately, we live in a culture where people are very sedentary, and they don't have family meal time. They eat too much supersized fast food. They're sitting around in front of the TV playing Nintendo and so on. And so even if they don't gain excess weight, their health is not what it should be. And I think it's really important to go back and look at that the food guide pyramid. Usually there's one on every breakfast food box. And if you can cut that out or get a copy from your extension agent and put it up on the refrigerator or on a bulletin board and see if your children and you as well are eating those 5 food groups every day, starting with breads and cereals, fruits, vegetables, meat and alternates, and milk and dairy products. And we really need all those 5 food groups. And what's happening is our kids today seem to be eating a lot of highly processed foods that don't necessarily have these 5 food groups in them. And so this is damaging their health.
Hmm.
And the schools, some of the schools are not helping very much because they have vending machines. The kids can go to school and buy a package of potato chips, a candy bar, and a large bottle of pop and have that for a lunch. And I think that parents have a responsibility here to see really what is going on and what can be done to help those kids be eating good nutrition at school.
Yeah. There was an article that we came across about this situation, how sugar gets into schools in The Economist, and it talked about the situation in Texas and the agriculture commissioner for Texas. Well, she put up a stink, and she learned that around 60% of the school districts in the state of Texas had contracts with Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola is not the only one. There's Pepsi and Dr. Pepper and other companies. Anyway, the total revenue from those contracts was $54 million for less than 4 million pupils. And,
yeah.
And the contracts that were being offered in the Austin School District specified that 90% of vending machines should sell 20-ounce bottles.
Yes, that's common in California as well. And the school, it gets this money from the vending machines companies or the soft drink companies, and that's part of the problem. They start to depend on that money. But I think the parents need to realize, where is this money coming from? It's coming right out of the pockets of their kids. And do they want to support this in their school? And I think that many parents have have begun to rebel with, about that.
Yeah.
Need to go to their school board and talk about that. Is that really what we want to happen to our kids? Do we want to sell out our kids' nutrition? And also, do we want to run our schools with money that the kids are putting in these machines? Is that really how we need to run to finance our schools?
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Chicago, line one. Hi.
Hi. That isn't the only problem we have in the Chicago schools. I guess you've heard about that. I constantly hear about nutrition-wise, beans and rice are the perfect combination. What are they referring to? What kind of rice and what kind of beans?
Well, vegetables don't have a total protein. So if you want to get a high-quality protein, you really need to eat some meat or animal products.
I see.
But for people who don't want to, then they can get all those proteins that they need to get a good combination from beans and rice. So that's the thinking there. Of course, if you have some meat in your chili, you don't have to worry about that.
Well, when you say rice, is it the white rice, brown rice, or what kind of rice?
You know, there's a lot of controversy right now that people should eat only whole grains and whole wheat rice and, and whole wheat pastas. This is not really true. And we have to be careful about not going to extremes. And I think in America, we tend to go to extremes.
We do.
You eat everything all white, you know, white flour, or totally brown flour. And this is not what we should be doing. We should be eating a variety of grains. So if you eat rice that's enriched, you're getting a good product.
Enriched. Is that what you buy at the supermarket, or is that
Yes, I think I think all rice is enriched.
All right.
And all white bread is enriched.
All right. And then when you say beans, what kind of beans? There's a million different beans out.
Like baked beans, not green beans. But any kind of beans would provide that protein.
And canned beans, would that be the same?
Yes. Oh. Canned pork and beans, sure.
All right.
Kidney beans, chickpeas, split peas, anything in that, you know, in that starchy, meaty, like bean thing.
Right, and those foods are good for us. Potatoes are good for us, too. And
yes.
Right now there is some talk about, oh, you should not eat white potatoes, you should not eat this and that. And I think we need to get some common sense here and remember that the three principles of nutrition are balance, which means eating from all those five food groups, variety, which means eat different foods from the food groups, and moderation. So balance, variety, and moderation are the principles.
And potato chips, candy bars, and soda pop don't fall into those.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with eating one of those things, but it should be in the context of a total day's plan that, you know, where you get the other foods. And that's what's happening today is kids are filling up on those, so they're not eating those other foods.
All right, then, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You know, I think this gets to the confusion that we have about carbohydrates. I mean, not all carbohydrates are equal.
Well, that's true. Some have a higher glycemic index, and this is what the complaint some people have about, for example, white potatoes. But usually when we eat a meal, people really don't have to worry about that, the average person. Some people do, and then they need to have a dietitian that gives them a food plan. But I think the normal person, as I understand it, the thinking now is that we don't have to worry much about that glycemic index as long as we're eating a mixed meal.
Yeah. And maybe you would talk with us about the difference between a complex carbohydrate and simple carbohydrate.
Okay, that's easy, because simple carbohydrates are sugar and sweets. And it's okay to have some, of course, but we don't want to have so much of that it's crowding out the other foods that we eat.
Yeah, and as you point out in your book, underage, and overweight, carbohydrates are stored as fat only when the calorie intake is too high.
Right. And protein is not stored at all as fat, so the fat on our bodies comes mostly from fat that we eat, but also carbohydrates when we eat more. And actually, alcohol provides quite a bit of calories, fat calories there, too.
Because it's so much sugar.
Well, alcohol is just different. It's the fourth thing besides protein, carbohydrate, fat, and then alcohol. We don't talk much about that because it's not really a nutrient. It doesn't help the body, but it does lay down as fat in our fat cells.
Hmm.
Maybe we could talk about this book, Underage and Overweight,
yeah.
Also has a seven-step plan
right.
for raising healthy weight kids.
Right.
Do you think your listeners would be interested?
I think they would be. Let me reintroduce you and get a sip of water, and then we'll go on and we'll talk about that seven-point plan for raising healthy weight children. Frances Berg is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of Underage and Overweight, America's Childhood Obesity Crisis, What Every Family Needs to Know. She's a licensed nutritionist, family wellness specialist, and adjunct professor at the University of North Dakota School of Medicine. Underage and Overweight is published by Heatherly Press, and you can find our guest on the World Wide Web at www.healthyweight.com. Net. So what's involved in this seven-point plan for keeping everybody healthy?
Well, the first thing is to normalize activity, and I really believe this physical activity is the key to regulating our bodies, making everything work better, and so we need to try to figure out how we can get activity into our lives. And for parents, from the time their kids are little, can you be active in front of the TV? Can you take them to the park? Can you play? I'm really disappointed to see so many parents now are taking their kids to school. They're not walking to school. They're not riding their bikes anymore. And I know there are some safety issues, but I think parents have to think really carefully here about protecting their kids too much. Would it be better to walk with your kids to school and let them get acquainted with their neighborhood? Instead, it seems like kids get to be 14 or 15, and there they are in a car with a carload of teenagers. So we need to teach our children how to be safe from the time they're small. So normalize that activity. If we can work it into our day, some people like to go to the gym and work out at night, but most people are too busy to do that.
Mm.
And so how can we work it into our day? How can we park a little farther away from work and walk to work just like our children can? That's the first point. The second one is to normalize eating. And the first thing there is to stop dieting. You can't eat in a normalized way if you're dieting, because normal eating means you're trying to respond to your own body signals. And the third point is balance that sound nutrition. So let's look at those five food groups and make sure that we're getting plenty of food from those five food groups.
Yeah.
Four, feeling good about yourself, accepting yourself, having self-respect. Be proud and appreciate the unique talents and skills that you have yourself. And five is communicate feelings. And it's really important for parents and children to communicate with each other. And there again, if we have those regular meals, that's just a good time. Or maybe fixing the meal is a good time to communicate with a parent. Feel good about others. Let's be tolerant of other people. Let's appreciate size diversity as well as other kinds of diversity. And then seven is balance the dimensions of wellness. So let's stand back and look at that total health. Emotional health and social health and spiritual health as well as physical health.
Yeah. Take a look at a child's interests and build on that.
Yes.
And I think sometimes we're guilty of the idea no pain, no gain, and exercise becomes a penalty rather than an activity that is fun to do.
Oh, yes. And that's so important. We need to teach our kids and for ourselves to move for the sheer joy and power of it. The time that we can spend with family and friends and nature, being out there, and let it be a natural part of your life. And fitness feels good. Once a person gets out and is doing it, it feels good. And be creative. Find fun activities that you like, and each person is different there.
Yeah. You know, back to normalizing eating, I think that is the second step.
Yes.
Should we be more... Should we pay more attention to what we're bringing into the house so that we're not we're taking stock of what's in the fridge and what's in the cupboard, and it looks sort of like that pyramid that you've now got us out and pinned to the, pinned to the fridge.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, we don't want to bring too many snack foods in the house, and there we need to monitor, what is the family eating? Probably many families need to cut down on some of that snack food. But to bring the foods into the house that you think are healthy, and we shouldn't cut out all candy and so forth, because then a person tends to feel deprived. So there again, let's try not to go to extremes, because so many times that causes binging too.
Yeah. Another thing that you're a big advocate for is going about all of this very slowly. As you talked with a listener in Aurora, 5 minutes for someone who is really having difficulty moving because of his or her weight, 5 minutes may be very realistic and might be right on target.
Oh, yes, very much so. Many people have quite sedentary lives, and they should not just
all of a sudden, yeah.
It can even be a risk, a health risk.
Yeah. So how do we go about doing this, maintaining new habits? I mean, it's tough to break old habits.
Right. Well, there's more to these 7 steps. There's actually a contract in the book. You can write a contract to yourself or work on a contract with your child. And just weekly contract. I believe it's better not to set a long-term goal. Just set a goal for this week. I will do that 5 minutes of physical activity. And keep a little record, not a complex one, but just a record of what you did. And it's very rewarding to look back and see what you did, because it all comes so gradually that it can seem as though you're not making very many changes.
Yeah.
And then you look back in a month or two, and you actually did. And that's very rewarding.
Yeah. Now, do you recommend rewarding children for, making the goal?
Oh, sure. Sure, that's another thing. just like in school, when you learn something in school, you usually get a grade for it, and that is rewarding. You get smiley faces and encouragement from the teacher, and all of those things help. So I even recommend that you decide on a reward for this week, whatever will work. And it should not be a food reward, because
right.
We want to take emotion, separate emotion from food if possible. And so we don't want a food reward, but all kinds of other rewards. And let the child, if the child is old enough, let them decide on the reward they want at the end of the week.
Yeah. When I was a kid in school, the kids that were overweight had a tough time of it.
Yeah.
And if you have a child that's overweight, how do you tackle that problem?
That's really a big problem. And in a way, it's two problems, because it's how the child feels about themselves, their own self-esteem and their own self-acceptance. But it's also that culture out there, which is so prejudiced. And this is one reason why I'm so upset that there's so much talk right now about how terrible it is to be overweight, because that targets these kids. And really, I believe it increases the prejudice. In fact, there are studies that show that. Parents need to love that child unconditionally and never suggest that I'll love you more if you lose weight. And we need to honor that child, and with all kinds of loving methods of interaction, communication, and active play.
Yeah. And at school, though, within that building, any advice for how you might talk with teachers or the principal? There's a very touching story in this book, one of many, about a little girl who had no friends, and she was ridiculed and bullied every day.
Yes, and that can happen. Sometimes it's where the teacher doesn't see it, and sometimes it's right in front of the teacher, and they need to stop that. Right now, there is a little more emphasis on stopping bullying in children or in schools, and I think that parents can encourage that. Parents who have a concern about their kids, and you need to listen to the kids. Have them, if they'll tell you, well, what did somebody say to you, and help them to
feel empowered to take a good approach, but also it doesn't hurt to go to the school. And what is our school doing about bullying? And certainly bullying, size prejudice comes in there very big. So it's bullying about all kinds of things. And I think that's very important.
Yeah. Also, in child care, any advice for parents who have young, very young children in child care?
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to check that child care and see what's happening. Every child care place now should be having active games for the kids to play at least sometime during that period. And they can be marching around while the music is playing, doing all kinds of things. Or they can be outside playing, but I think every child care provider needs to have physical activity in part of their program. They also, you also probably would want to look at what kinds of lunch is being served.
Mm. And how much time is there watching videos or TV?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Not more than 1 hour. The recommendations are from the state of Iowa has some excellent recommendations. And they recommend not more than 1 hour of videos in daycare, and not more than under two during the whole day. So if the child is seeing 1 hour during daycare, then that means 1 hour or less at home.
Right.
So that's something for the parents to look very closely at.
Okay. Our listener in Aurora has a follow-up for you. Let's go and talk with the caller on line four, the toll-free line. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning, good afternoon again.
Hi.
I heard on the TV this morning the evidence being that if you nurse your baby, the longer you nurse the child, the baby, the more, I can't think of a word right now, but the child will not be obese. And I nursed all my four children, and they aren't. And how does that work? What is the thought there?
Well, actually, the research on that is controversial. Some of the research shows one way, some another.
Really?
But the idea is that women do store up fat for nurturing the baby, for breastfeeding, and so that fat is there to be used. I think most of the research now, we have to say that it shows that breastfeeding is an excellent technique for the baby in many ways, but and some people recommend it as for both the mother and the child being less likely to put on excess fat. One thing that breastfeeding does that bottle feeding doesn't, which is kind of interesting, bottle feeding you can see exactly how much that child drank. And if they drink 4 ounces, one feeding, then parents sometimes feel they've got to drink 4 ounces every feeding. Where with breastfeeding, when they're done, you let them stop, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is how one way that we teach kids that they're the ones that decide when they're hungry and when they're full.
The thing I thought about the breastfeeding, I think there's a little more exercise to breastfeeding than there is to milk, a bottle of milk. And I think it provides the baby, aside from the maternal warmth, etc., the exercise that you get from breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm. That could be. And there certainly are a lot of benefits in breastfeeding as far as allergies and immunity and so on. So it's definitely to be recommended. But I don't think we should overstress that will protect either the child or the mother from gaining excess weight.
Yeah. We've got to wrap up here now. We're at the end of the time that we can spend together today. Wellness and wholeness, health at any size, health at every size. What kind of reaction are you getting? What kind of reaction does this approach get from experts, in particular pediatricians?
You know, most of them are very relieved, and many of them are treat their patients at the size they are rather than trying to get them to lose weight. And so it's a great relief for them to know that they don't have to change the size of that body. And, you know, they can't do it anyway. So they try and it doesn't succeed. So increasingly we're seeing health providers move to the health at every size approach.
And they've given up on these myths and the disappointments that weight loss has brought. The Health at Every Size paradigm embraces the notion that beauty, health, and strength come in all sizes, and health is not defined by body weight, but by physical, mental, and social well-being. And it's a health-centered approach. And when pediatricians understand this, I think they agree. But sometimes they can come over just a little ways at a time. It takes a while to change to this this thinking.
Hmm. Very interesting. Frances,
I think you'll find that dietitians across the country are probably the most likely to be using this Health at Every Size method.
Really? That's interesting. Frances, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, it's great to talk to you.
Frances Burke has been our guest this afternoon. She's a licensed nutritionist, family wellness specialist, and adjunct professor at the University of North Dakota School of Medicine. You'll find her on the web at www.healthyweight.net. She's the author of Underage and Overweight, America's Childhood Obesity Crisis, What Every Family Needs to Know. The publisher is Hatherly Press. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. And I believe Todd Gleason is with us this afternoon.
I am. Okay. And from the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, futures finished the day lower. Across the grains floor, TOF 26.5 cents. In the soybeans for the day, the corn were down 5 cents. Let's begin in the wheat pit for the day, though. Futures there settled like this in the March contract, a 388 high, a low at 381. Excuse me, a low at 381 and three quarters, and a settlement price at 385, and they finished down four for the day. The May wheat, 393, the high, the low at 387.5, and a settlement price at 391.5, down 3.5. July contract, 387, the high, the low at 383, and a settlement price at 387, down a penny and three quarters. September futures, 390.5, the high, the low at 387.5, and a settlement price at 390.5, down 2. December futures for the wheat pit, 399, the high, the low at 395, settled 399. They were down 2.25 for the day. In the corn pit, futures lower, down anywhere between 4 and 5 cents after last week's outside down week. Technically, futures managed to move lower again today. March contract, 274, the high, the low at 269, settled at 271.25, and that March settled down 5 cents for the day. May futures in the corn pit, 278.5, the high, the low at 274, and a settlement price at 276, down 5.5 cents for the day. July corn, 281, the high, the low at 276.5, a settlement price at 278.25, down 5.5 cents. And the September futures, 274.5, the high, the low at 271, settled 273.5, and they finished down 5. December corn, 271, the high, and the low at 266.25, a settlement price at 269.5, down 4.5 cents. March futures, 273.5, the high, the low at 270, settled 272.5, and they were down 5 for the day. And the July corn, 275.5, the high, the low 273.5, a settlement price at 275.5, down 4. December corn futures, 252, the high, the low 250, that December 05 contract settling at 250, down 4 cents. March oats, 156.75, the high, the low at 152.5, a settlement price 155.75, down 1. May oat futures, 160, the high, the low at 156.5, a settlement price at 158.75, down 0.25 cents. Now, for the pit that had the most losses for the day, the bean pit from the soy complex, soybeans, 808, the high, low at 790.5, settled 793, down 26.5 cents for the day. May futures in the bean pit, 809, the high, the low at 793, settled 795.75. They were off 27. July, 801, the high, the low at 786, settled 788.5, down 24.5 cents. September bean, 720, the high, the low at 708, settled 708, now down 23 cents. From the new crop, November bean, 653.5, the high, low at 642, a settlement price at 643.25. They finished down 19.25. January beans, 654, the high, the low at 644, settled 644.5, down 21.5 cents. And the March futures, 651, the high, the low at 646, settlement price at 641, rather at 646, they finished down 21 cents for the day. March bean meal, 252, the high, the low at 245, and a settlement price at 245.10, they were down 105 for the day. The May meal at 252.50, and that was the high, the low at 246.30, settled at 246.70. They were down 980 for the day. March bean oil, 29.18 the high, the low at 28.88, settled 28.98, down 29, and the May bean oil, 29.12 for the high, the low at 28.83, settlement price at 28.94. They finished down 41. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. A mostly higher day today on the Mercantile Exchange. February live cattle, however, finish lower. March feeder cattle, 84.40 the high, 83.25 the low, 84.05 the settlement, that up 37.5. April, 85.90 the high, 84.90 the low, 85.70 the settlement, that up 30. May, 86.40 the high, 84.95 the low, 86.17.5 the settlement, that up 30. August, 88.60 the high, 87.85 the low, 88.55 the settlement, that up 30. February live cattle, 76.70 the high, 75.75 the low, 76.52.5 the settlement, that down 17.5. March, 74.50 the high, 74 even the low, 74.45 the settlement, that down 50. April, 73.50 the high, 72.30 the low, 73.15 the settlement, that down 27.5. June live cattle, 70.75 the high, 69.85 the low, 70.22.5 the settlement, that down 37.5. February lean hogs, 59.35 the high, 57.40 the low, 59.02.5 the settlement, that up 167.5. April, 60.45 the high, 58.90 the low, 60 even the settlement, that up 80. May, 61 even the high, 60 even the low, 60.70 the settlement, that up 45. June lean hog, 65.20 the high, 63.95 the low, 64.85 the settlement, that up 65. February pork bellies, 85.25 the high, the low 84.55, the settlement 84.85, that down 7.5. March bellies, 86.25 the high, 85.65 the low, 85.92.5 the settlement, that up 2.5. On the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow is currently up 66 points at 10,554, the NASDAQ 12 higher at 2078, and the S&P 500 is 9 higher at 1140.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the U of I's Center for Advanced Study, whose Millicom 2004 lecture series presents The Remains of the Name, The Origins of the Harlem Renaissance and the Discourse of Egyptology, 1922 to 1925, by Robert A. Hill, Department of History, UCLA, on Monday, February 23rd at 4 p.m. on the third floor of the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. For more information, go to www.cas.uiuc.edu.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Dear Dr. Science, writes Jerry Roberti from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I am a 26-year-old and can't remember what it was like to live without the Internet.